All right, it's just us in here now. We're going to start our class. This is our last night together as we finish up the book of Ecclesiastes. Probably some of the more famous passages in Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, but we'll be getting to that. If I turn the clicker on. Okay, so let's get to, we did not finish. The intent was to get through and finish part of chapter 11. That did not happen last time, so we'll start at the beginning of chapter 11. As we ended there, we started talking about actions for desperate times that we start with, kind of with chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. It says, "Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to 7 or even 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth." What does this sound like to you? What are we talking about? If you're dividing a portion and putting some of, squirreling some of it away, what are you doing? Preparing for what? For the future, right? And throwing bread on the water, I mean, that's not something like an example we would use, because here in Florida, if you throw bread on the water, what's going to happen? The fish are going to eat it, and the ducks are going to eat it, right? It is gone, all right? So you're not preparing for the future that way, but that's something they use, maybe a colloquialism for preparing for the future. But we can understand, if you get a lump sum of money, a windfall in Monopoly, and you divide that up and use it over a period of time, that's preparing for the future. So that's what we're talking about in preparation for future events. We don't know what's going to happen. In verse 3, kind of start this, men don't know what will come. The certainty about the future. One thing, he says, if the clouds are full and they pour out rain upon the earth, and the weather, and whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, whether the tree falls, there it lies. Super profound, right? My grandfather always talks about every bucket has its own bottom, right? I mean, it's that profound. If a tree falls down, there it lies, right? Have you ever been in a car and somebody asks, "Are we there yet?" The answer is always yes. We are always where we are, right? So there's very profound statements. Wherever a tree falls, there it lies, okay? So those are things we can be certain about. I can be certain when a tree falls down, there it is, all right? I can be certain when it rains, it's raining, right? We can be certain that in summertime in the afternoon, it probably will rain in Florida, right? So those are things we can be certain about. But there are certain things we cannot be certain about. There's things that we get over-cautious. How many times have you seen somebody take forever to make a decision because they're so cautious about making the decision? Maybe we've been guilty of doing that ourselves, right? Been so cautious about a decision we're making that we don't make the decision or we miss out on an opportunity. That's probably what they're talking about here. Maybe you're thinking the person is distracted, but generally, he who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks to the clouds will not reap. If we're looking at the wind, why does wind matter when you're sowing, putting seeds down? Because seeds can be blown away, right? And if it's windy, I don't want to be throwing my seeds because that's money getting blown away, all right? So we can be overly cautious about things. But in the end, if we're overly cautious, nothing gets done, right? And so that's what he says in verse 5. Just as you do not know the path of the wind, nor how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God and who makes all things. And so he says, sow your seed. We don't know about all things. Now, science has told us how bones are formed in the womb, right? We do know those things now. But do we know all things? No, we don't, obviously, right? In the time that this was written, how bones were formed in the womb was a mystery. They did not know the science behind that. We do have science behind that, but do we know all things? Are all things revealed unto us? No, there's lots of things that science still does not have the answers to, though they pretend. So this is something that he is saying here. We don't know everything. So just sow your seed when you have time. Verse 6, sow your seed in the morning and do not be idle in the evening. You do not know whether morning or evening or sowing will succeed or where both of them will lie. You don't know. So just do it, right? Just Nike this and just go, right? It's on some things. And so that's what he's saying about our life. Do what you can while you can. Chapter 9, verse 10 kind of it comes up here. Whatever your hand finds to do, do with all your might. There's no activity or planning when you're dead. You can't do everything when you're dead, so just do it while you can. Take advantage of the time you have when you have it. So these are some of the things he's talking about here in chapter 11. Now we're kind of moving into the conclusion of all things, which Solomon writes very, very handedly about some conclusions. He has an introduction to this conclusion here. He says, "The light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility." And kind of, we can't close without some futility and a little bit of vanity, right? In the book of Ecclesiastes, we've got to cover some of that. So enjoy things that are light, and we'll see how he's contrasting that in just a moment. But enjoy those things that are light when you can. And remember them, because there will be days are coming when it will be dark. And usually when he's talking about that, he's talking about death, right? Death is dark. That's a very, very dark thing. So anyway, but verse 9, we start talking about, so I'll put this up here. I negated that. The time of youth. "Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. You know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things." So in the time of youth, are we talking about just go do whatever you want to do? Why is this not this unfettered, unchecked type of frivolity? Why? What kind of line in verse 9 tells us that he's not encouraging us just to go do whatever we want to do? There's judgment, right? So God, you can go do what you want to do, right? Has anybody ever, you've asked somebody, I want to go do item X or thing Y. I want to go do this. And the person you're talking to about it says, well, if you want to, I guess you can. Right? You talk to the wife, hey, you want to go hang out with the guys tonight? We're going to do this. All right, if you want to, you can do that. Is it just me? Okay, it's just me maybe. But yes, go do what you want to do, but remember there will be judgment. And this is not a marriage class, but anyway, there will be judgment. Go do what you want to do. Enjoy the things you can enjoy. Life is to be enjoyed. If we learn anything from the book of Ecclesiastes, life and the things that are good, God has made for us to enjoy. We do not have to be this stoic society that does not enjoy the things that God has made. He did not have to make it beautiful, ladies and gentlemen, but he did. He did not have to make it enjoyable, but he did. And the good things in life, we can enjoy those things. And enjoy them, and in this context, he says, enjoy them when you're young, because later on, we will maybe not enjoy them as much. In verse 10, he says, here's some bad things, a negative admonition. "Remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and prime of life are fleeting." And we know that, right? Every day we know that. Those things are fleeting. So why do we fill our lives up with things that hurt us when we can be enjoying the things that God has blessed us with? If I put right precepts in place, right? Right character things in place, right choices in place, does that mean that always good things will happen? No, right? Life happens, right? There are things that happen. But in general, if I'm living life the right way, I will have, there will be reward for that. There will be enjoyment. But there are some griefs that we can remove from our lives by obeying the principles God has set up, right? There are some things that I don't have to go through because I'm applying this to my life and to my heart. And I don't go down those paths that would lead me to destruction, right? That would lead me to some hurt. And so the wisdom of God applied to the life keeps us from those things and does remove grief and anger from the heart. Anyway, that's a whole nother lesson about removing anger. But those things, we need to make sure we're keeping them away from us and enjoy our youth, enjoy those things that God has blessed us with. And just the fundamental aspect, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. He in no way is saying sow your wild oats, YOLO kind of thing. He's not saying that at all, right? In everything, he's saying keep God in perspective in all that we do, in all things we enjoy, in youth or in our age, keep God in perspective. Remember also the Creator in the days of your youth. And now we're going to start talking about some evil days. Yay! Some evil days is what he says. before the evil days come and the years draw when you will say, I have no delight in them. Remember we said earlier the things that we were talking about, the things that enjoy the light, enjoy youth, because days will come when you don't enjoy them. Look over in 2 Samuel chapter 19 very quickly. David's kind of coming back after being ousted Second Samuel chapter 19, verses 34 and 35. He invites a guy to come with him and enjoy time around the king's table, Barzillai. But Barzillai said to the king, "How long have I yet to live?" Verse 34, 2 Samuel chapter 19. He says, "How long do I have yet to live that I should go up to with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad? Or can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Or can I hear any more the voice of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to the Lord my king? Your servant would merely cross over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king compensate me with this reward? Let your servant return that I may die in my own country, near my grave of my father and my mother." What is he saying? He's over 80 years old, this guy Barzillai. The king wants to honor him because of the things he's done in helping him to come up to the king and enjoy the beautiful things with the king. And what is he saying? "I just want to go home, man. I just want to go home. I can't taste if the food's good or bad. I can't hear anything. If a toad's croaking or men are singing, I couldn't tell the difference. So I would just rather go home rather than mess with all that and exert all that energy." And so that is something that is true. It's interesting. The Bible puts those things in there. And this guy is very real where he is in his life. And so the time will come when that might be the case. He says, "Behold, the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain." So this is a contrast from the light of youth. So we have age, general description of old age, and then this contrast to what we saw in the years of light and youth. And now the years of darkness. And so we have this analogy of the infirmities of old age. "In the day of the watchman of the house, in that day the watchmen of the house tremble. The mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle, because they are few, and those who look through windows grow dim. The doors on the street are shut, as the sound of the grinding mill is low, and the one who will arise in the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly." What is he talking about here? Who are the watchmen of the house that tremble? Hands. He's talking about hands. The mighty men stoop. He's talking about their legs. The grinding ones stand idle because there are few. Any guesses? Teeth, right? So those who look through windows grow dim. Eyes. "And the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low." We're talking about our ears. Maybe light sleeping with the sound of the bird, and the voice, sing softly, cannot speak as well as it could before. He says, "Furthermore, men are afraid." So we're talking about these things in old age, and he talks about the fear, possibly the fear of death, the fear of things, tares on the road. There are certain things that we did in our youth that as we try to do them in our age, they're more of a danger to us. Certain paths we were able to go and leaps and bounds now would be danger to us. And so these are things that he's kind of highlighting here in the first part of chapter 5. And then he goes back to that sort of analogy, the almond tree blossoms. How many of you have seen an almond tree blossom? What color is it? Any guesses? What happens to white? Excellent, yes. So the almond tree blossoms white. Do we blossom white in our age? Yes, we do. Or some of us just stop blossoming altogether, right? Yes, well, I wasn't going to go quiet all the way and just be blunt about it, but since you brought it up, yes, some of it, there's no blossoms, they just fall out, right? So. And some of us trying to color our blossoms, but we're not going to talk about that. So Here's old age. Almond tree blossoms. The grasshopper drags himself along, talking about how we walk. And we don't quite have the hop in our spring in our step like we had before. And the caperberry is ineffective. This actually was something that was used to kind of make people hungry. And the caperberry is to bring on an appetite. And saying that there's just no appetite anymore. You just don't eat. There's not really an appetite for anything anymore is kind of the idea. And for the man goes to his eternal home while the mourners go about in the street. Actually, in the King James, I believe it says long. Does he King James and long? Okay, so it's that long home. Where's my long home? Again, talking about death. I mean, he's going to go there. He goes there all the time in this book. And so we go to that long home, and mourners go about in the streets. And so again, there's this idea of the grave, the finality of death. And talking about these things in verse 6, it says, in the New American Standard, it says, remember him before the silver cord is broken. That remember him is not there, but we do need to, before the silver cord is broken, what are we talking about? Death again, right? What is that silver cord? It's your lifeline, right? It's your lifeline. I mean, that's like a very life string. There's this golden bowl that is crushed. This was a golden bowl. This bowl that was used for lamp oil. And so that's what they was talking about. If you break that, then the lamp is extinguished. If the pitcher by the well is shattered, can you draw water anymore? If the wheel at the cistern is crushed or broken, you're not going to be drawing well up or water up from the well. So what is he trying to talk about here? Just different ways of talking about death. Getting very poetic here at the end, right? Not as blunt as before. And so we're talking about here death. And I just wanted to mention, actually, look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 through 10. The Bible uses this idea of the body as a house in a lot of passages. Oh, I'm in 1 Corinthians. No wonder I didn't read right. I was like, what in the world? That is not what I was going for. 2 Corinthians. Who's in the right spot? I am. Okay. So 2 Corinthians chapter 5. For we know that if the earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For indeed in this house we groan, longing to be clothed with our dwelling from heaven, as much as we, having put it on, will not be found naked. For indeed while we are in this tent we groan, being burdened, and because we do not want to be unclothed, but to be clothed. What is he talking about? What do we look forward to? In this tent, we do groan. But what do we look forward to? An eternal life, a different kind of tent, right? We put on something very different. Yes, there's no sorrow, no pain, no tears, those kind of things that we look forward to. So while Solomon is talking about the reality of old age, Paul kind of brings things into perspective. Yes, old age, we do groan in this body, but there are so much there's things that are so much better that we're looking forward to. If you want to write out there, 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 and 14 also talks about this. 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. There are so many things we have to look forward to, even after this life. So he again, verse 6, talking about just different analogies of death, things that will not happen anymore. Verse 7, have you heard this before? Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Right? It's quite a popular passage, especially in relationship to funerals. In Genesis chapter 7, and then Genesis chapter 3, verse 19, this concept, you will toil in the dirt, and then you will return to dirt from whence you came. Thanks, right? Appreciate it. Now we get on to Adam and Eve, right? And there are all kind of jokes about Adam and Eve sinning and that kind of stuff. Songs written about it. But if it wasn't them, somebody was going to do it, right? Somebody was going to do it. But then he returns to one of his favorite themes in verse 8. Almost a thesis for. Verse 8, what does he say? Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, or says the proclaimer, all is vanity. All right, here we are at the end of the book. Let's put that statement in context. If you take that statement out of context and you just read it, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, right? And you just read that statement, you're thinking, man, this guy's depresso, right? Like, why? Who is this guy? But now that we've gone through the book, how would we put that in context? Yeah, it's like Kool-Aid packet, right? There's just two parts, just Kool-Aid packet and water. That's us, right? There's two ingredients to human. There's the dirt that we came from. And in literally, like you're saying, like everything essentially is dirt because everything's going to be burned up with the fervent heat. All that we cared about, all that we thought was so important, vanity of vanities, right? In the end, we're going back to God. And so it is of extreme importance how we live this life amongst the vanities. Are we distracted by those things that glimmer or shine? Are we distracted by the pleasures of life? Solomon went through those things, like we said several times. He's gone to the extreme in those areas, and he said at the end of the tunnel of those things is what? Vanity. It does not fulfill like it promises. It does not fulfill like it's advertised. It does not give us, it does not fill us in any way because it is still just physical stuff. We're not physical, like the Kool-Aid packet. We're not just dirt. There is a spirit inside of us that can only be satiated with God. And we've got to make sure that's part of our lives. Otherwise, we're reaching after things that will never fill. And you know people like that. You see them on a daily basis that are like that, groping for things that will never satisfy, concerned about things that will never fill them up, and in the end, vanity of vanities. And we're able to see that with this wisdom and an open heart to kind of see that. Now, it's one thing to sit here and study it in on Wednesday night Bible class when we're surrounded by people and we're just coming in after a hard day's work and some of us are still trying to stay awake. But it's one thing in this context to read it, right? But it's another thing to actually walk out the doors and try and do this and to not get distracted by those things that are out there. Because, like, you know, how many of you have made New Year's resolutions? None of you. Some of you are honest. Okay. How long do those last? Like, I'm going to do this, right? You buy all the exercise equipment and everything, and then like a month later, it's holding clothes in your room. So we know we come out with good intentions, but it's the day-to-day things that we need to make sure we're plugging in on, not huge, giant resolves. Yeah, there's some hands up over here. Yes, sir. So could y'all hear that? So we are this physical, spiritual being in an eternal being in a physical world that, you know, can only be satiated, can only be satisfied by eternal things, like what we're talking about here. As long as we don't get caught up in the physical. Now, can we enjoy the physical? Yes, we're supposed to, right? It's almost commanded. Enjoy the physical. Enjoy what God has given you. But keep that in check, right? Keep those things in check. So again, vanity of vanity, says a preacher, all is vanity in light of a life living with God. And so in addition to being a wise man, he starts talking about his qualifications here. And I didn't put that up there. Sorry. Okay. He starts talking about his qualifications, his credentials. He says, in addition to being a wise man, the preacher also taught the people knowledge and pondered and searched out and arranged many proverbs. The preacher sought to find delightful words and to write words of truth correctly. And so these are things that we are trying to be set forth here in the writing of Ecclesiastes. See, can we put all this up here? Yes. Let me just do this. All right. So verse 11, the words of the wise men are like goads, and masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. Right. What's a goad? like something that's used. Where's in the King James, it uses how long will thou kick against the pricks in relationship to Paul, right? And sometimes we're in that same situation. We're kicking against, God's trying to push us in one direction. Wisdom should push us in one direction. But what are we doing? But I don't want to, right? Like we're doing that kind of thing, like small children. But no, I don't want to do that. This is what, eat your broccoli. But no. So we do that in relationship to spiritual things sometimes. God's trying to push us one direction. Wisdom is pushing us one direction. And we hear the voice of people saying, these are what we should do. And all that information comes from one shepherd. Who's that shepherd? God. If you want to write out there, Genesis chapter 48, verse 15. Genesis 48, 15, he's mentioned, God is mentioned as the shepherd. Also, obviously, Psalm 23, verse 1, the good shepherd. So we have God's that shepherd. God is providing this wisdom to push us in the direction we should go. If we're found kicking against it, whose fault's that? Mine, right? That's me. I got to own that. So we got to make sure we're honest with the information. He says, but beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless and excessive. Devotion to books is wearying to the body. All right, that's just free information, right? Yes, Felix said, much learning has made thee mad, Paul, right? And so that can be the case. Some people are like endless professional students, needing several doctorates and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, why? I'm like, cruel and unusual to do that. But in this case, he's just stating an obvious fact. There's a lot of information out there. Is it true today that there's information out there? There is a plethora of information. And it is our task to do what? To filter that information that's coming into our eyes and our ears, right? We have to filter that information. If there's an excess of information, there are people out there who have driven themselves mad by just finding all the dark corners in the internet and all the craziness that's on there, have literally made themselves mad. And we need to make sure we're filtering those things. So I guess if we want to update this, devotion to online websites is a wearing to the body, verse 12. The conclusion, which is what you've been waiting for many weeks. The conclusion, when all has been heard, fear God, keep His commandments. This is like a drop the mic kind of statement, right? At the very beginning, as we look at fear God and keep His commandments. It's pretty simple, right? Just as a slogan, as a bumper sticker. But how does that apply to actually trying to play it out? Remember, when we talk about fearing God, is that a literal trembling? Maybe, depending on what you've done, right? When Dad gets home, you'll get your punishment when Dad gets home. How many of you had that when you were little? Mom, just beat me now, please. I don't want to fear Dad coming home. So there should be a healthy respect for God. 1 John chapter 5, verse 3, what does it mean to love God? In this is love. What does he say? 1 John chapter 5, verse 3, in this is love, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome, right? Behold, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. And so if we can do those things and hold on to those things, then that is what Solomon is saying. This is the conclusion of the matter. Fear, respect, have a healthy relationship towards God, and keep His commandments. Will good things always happen to you? No. But is this life heaven? No. That's part of the problem is we get caught up in this idea that this life is supposed to be the life we enjoy. This is just a vapor is what he says. This is not the life that we are, not that we can't, but this is not the end-all life that we should enjoy. It is the eternal reward that we're looking for. The gospel is a saving message to get us home with God. It is not so that we feel content and happy and all of life is roses in this life. Right? We get those things kind of mixed up sometimes. He says, for God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. If you want to run out there, Matthew chapter 10, verse 26, Romans 2:16. Is there anything hidden from God? No. How many of you unsuccessfully tried to hide something? Nobody's raising their hand. Okay, so, look over at 1 Corinthians chapter 4. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 5. Therefore, do not go on passing judgment before the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the things hidden in the darkness and disclose the motives of men's hearts, and then each man's praise will come to him from God. If we keep things in perspective, every act will come under judgment. What does that mean, every act? Is that both good and bad? We kind of lean towards that means the bad things, right? All the bad things are going to come out. Is it just saying bad things? This is everything, right? Every act, good or bad. Now, what do we say about somebody? What do they do with their own horn whenever they declare their own good act? They're blowing their own, they're tooting their own horn, right? Husbands, empty the dishwasher, right? I made the bed. What are we quick to do? Look, I made the bed, right? I made the bed. I did this. And we toot our own horn. We did something good. Yeah, right? But what does a humble spirit do? I'm going to do the good things I know, whether or not anybody ever sees it. Because in the end, God will give me the praise for those things. I've been around people that have tooted their own horn quite a bit, and it gets annoying. Right, and then just bless their hearts, right? So, but if we can be humble enough just to let God do that, I keep on doing what I need to do. I keep on doing what God's called me to do. I keep obeying His commandments, fearing Him, no matter what. And let God say, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joys, right? That's what we're looking forward to. Not somebody saying, good job there, guy, and giving you a scratch and sniff sticker. Who cares about that, right? Who cares about that? Any questions or anything as we close the book of Ecclesiastes? Yes, sir. This is it, right? That's right. Love Him. And that's exactly what keeping His commandments is showing respect, right? We need to show Him that respect and show Him that love by keeping His commandments. Any other comments? Yes, sir. Oh, wretched man that I am, right? That's right. God says if we're walking in the light as He is in the light, His blood continually cleanses us from all sins. If we can keep doing those things, we no longer have to cry, oh, wretched man that I am. That's guilt, right? And we should be guilty, but we can. There is redemption. Thank you very much for your time and for being here for this class on Ecclesiastes. Thank you.